Greetings and welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin, joined by the boss, John Roerink, and Ed Zarpolis from Target Insight. A little later, we're going to be talking with Jack O'Malley. He is the Republican candidate in the 101st District, and also Joanne Galloway. She is the Democratic candidate in the 107th District. That's the district currently held by Lee Chatfield. And John, we'll get to those interviews here in a second, but we got Ed in because we've been working here at MERS and GCSI with Target Insight on some polling that we're going to be releasing this week. And Ed, you've been burning the midnight oil, it sounds like, trying to put together some numbers. And we're not ready to release results right now, but I did want to get some of your observations on what you're seeing with these polls.
Well, just to put it in perspective, I've been doing polling since 1972. So I've gone through all the waves and the droughts and the dehydration and the mountain forces and whatever you can say, okay? What I'm seeing today in the polling data, and we're going to be doing about 12 to 15 different polls, okay, from congressional races, state Senate, state House, plus statewide races. And all of them, one thing that's missing, it's hard to find Republicans.
What do you mean it's hard to find Republicans? Don't you have it in a database somewhere? There should be names right there. Have the R next to them.
Well, I call them. I got a list of all Republicans.
Okay.
But they don't want to say they're Republican.
Oh, you can get them on the phone.
Oh, yeah, but they won't say Republican, or they don't want to do a poll because they're just refusing.
I think they're ashamed?
I don't know if they're ashamed, but they might be embarrassed.
That's what I mean.
You think the whole national scene starting to wash out Republicans and
I would have to say, well, let me explain how important this is. All these polls are showing about Gretchen's ahead. Well, that's not really the case, because the MERS poll of May of last year, the numbers have not changed in over a year. Gretchen's numbers and Schutte's numbers are roughly the same from our May-June poll of July of 2017, okay? So Schutte has not moved anything. We thought Kelly was bad. Schutte hasn't moved either. They're both running at or below their base. Gretchen is basically getting a free ride because she has not, she's been spending money to fight off Sharice Allender and El Said. But what's happening there is independent of the candidates in Michigan. It's all national politics playing right now. As a matter of fact, if I was a dog catcher, I'd be running on a national campaign of dog catchers because it's the feds that's screwing our dog.
Figuratively, not literally, I'm sure.
And considering the people I've had in the room, no, I'm just kidding.
but sort of getting back to the embarrassed comment. If you think about the traditional Republicans, though, the business community Republicans, they're pretty buttoned down. They don't really like lewd and lascivious comments or actions or activities. Do you think the antics that are coming out of the White House, the cloud of scandal, the indictments and the grand juries are starting to just make them want to walk away from their traditional party?
I would have to say so, because this is the first time, if you listen to all the talking heads, you have Republican congressmen, corporate leaders, basically now taking on the president directly. Ford Motor Company, okay, having to challenge them on the car, they're costing money. No, there's not a company that's not willing to say whatever. And every story, every day, they're hurting business. Basically, Pence came to Michigan and basically left. He showed up and then he left. Then he didn't spend any time talking about the races or anything. It's like when I saw Pence come and leave with Snyder, first of all, with Snyder, okay, who basically has been anti-Trump, you know, since, you know, the campaign started behind, they didn't talk about anybody in the state. It sounds like nobody wanted to appear with Trump. Right. Which was their representative.
Now, could it just be that the Republicans don't want to participate in the polls because they're disenchanted with the media, they're disenchanted with the polls, they don't want to participate, they think the polls are baloney, and you know what, just take it to the man, and they're just not going to participate, but they will show up in November. Is that a real possibility?
Well, they showed up for Dick DeVos, but there was more independents showing up for Governor Granholm. I'm not going to say they're not going to show up, but what we're seeing in the polls, in fact, there's a tripling of the number of people that are traditionally independent saying they're not going to be voting, because we do screens in our polls, okay? Mm-hmm. And I know from past history, these are independents, these are moderates, these are whatever like that, but this is the first time where I'm seeing now where the Democratic numbers essentially are staying the same compared to 2014, you know, 2016, where they should be. What's changing is the number of independents that are increasing and the dropping of commitment of Republicans saying that they're going to be voting.
So this means for Democratic candidates, fantastic news.
Correct. As long as we got to remember, this is no different than a hurricane. Is the water, the blue wave, going to recede by the time November comes? If you go back to 2002 when Gretchen, you know, Dick Possum's wave didn't show up on time. Well, Hurricane didn't show up. So the question is, without a message, because neither candidate, no one's really got a really message other than the congressional races, the gubernatorial candidates really have no message. There's no vision. No, they're just basically doing grassroots. So this is the mood of the public right now. It's all going to be a national message. Like I said, you can run on a national message against the feds, even if you're running for dog catcher.
Is there a way yet that you could sort of summarize for our listeners a percent advantage Dem this year versus past years? I mean, is it plus five? Is it plus six?
Let's go to history. Typically, even in years where Republicans kick butt in Michigan, the Democrats have a 4 to 7% turnout advantage, okay? Typically. In this poll, if you were to believe the numbers and we're weighting them and all that kind of stuff, they could have a 10% advantage. That means Gretchen should beat Bill Schuette if things don't change and break the 55% barrier, which will allow the coattails to happen.
Do we have any concept of what a plus 10 means in terms of Senate districts or House districts when you look at the makeup of the...
I've been working on that, and I haven't finished that analysis. I'm getting close to a tie, but I haven't finished up the analysis whether or not that flips it over to an actual majority in the Senate.
And you're saying a tie in the Senate. What about the House?
The House, if things continue, there's a good opportunity for them to take back. I don't know about how much yet, because remember, some of these numbers are going to change. You know, you go down into southeast Michigan, there's still a strong Republican base there. Things are not as going to be easy for the Democrats.
Wouldn't that be historic, a 1919 tie in the state Senate?
With the lieutenant governor.
With the lieutenant governor casting the final deciding vote. Think of all the drama we could... The
question would be, this, especially if Gretchen went in, because then you'd have truly somebody who doesn't care about politics and Garland Gilchrist in charge of running the Senate.
I think they would basically have two tin cans and a rope between Gretchen Whitmer and Garland Gilchrist up there on the rostrum.
She'd probably camp out in his office behind the chambers.
Yeah, right.
Well, we keep forgetting. There's one thing we keep forgetting. Almost 2 years ago, who was going to come to Gretchen's aid if she ran for governor? Andy Richardville.
Randy Richardville, he was going to be her running mate.
That's correct. Maybe he'd come and be her chief of staff.
I wouldn't count on that.
I'm not holding my breath.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Maybe she can make room for him somewhere else in the administration.
Maybe.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know exactly.
But I would have to tell the listener the fact is that there is a wave movement. The question is going to recede by the time November comes. Right now, what's happening with Trump numbers dropping in the state and the lack of, for example, other than Schuette, most of the rest of the ticket is not known on the Republican side. Even Posthumus, his running mate, is not really well-known. So nobody really has a well-known candidate.
Could it get worse for the Republicans between now and November?
These poll numbers are about as, I would assume this is worse, because this is getting into 2008 numbers right now on the advantage the Democrats are having.
But is this the worst it could get, or could it get worse?
It could get worse, yes.
One other thing I want to talk about before we go to our interviews. The Republican Governors Association, the head of the Republican Governors Association, came into Michigan to speak with Bill Schuette this past week. And what we were told is that there was some discussion or some thinking that there should be some type of changeover with the staff of the Schuette camp. And we already know that there's been some maneuvering around of some numbers as far as what RGA is going to put into this race and what they're not going to put into this race. Looks like they're front-loading things. I wanted to get your guys' perspective on what RGA is looking at right now, because they don't want to let go of the rope. Because if they let Schuette flail out there, it's going to be bad news for the rest of the ticket. So they're front-loading a bunch of media right now to try and help them out, try and prop them up as much as humanly possible, get a little momentum behind them. And if that means early money, if that means rejiggering the staff, then that's what they're willing to do.
Let me explain what's really going on here. Right now, the fact that the Republicans are in save Congress mode, that means the fact is whatever it takes in each state, they don't really care. They obviously would like Schuette to win, but the governor's race determines the turnout, not the U.S. Senate race. It's the governor's race. Their concern is whether or not Schuette's going to win or not. They don't want Schuette to lose so bad that he hurts the congressional races. Because remember, they don't want to lose Wahlberg. They don't want to lose Mike Bishop, okay? Mm-hmm. Some of my sources tell me that they've backed away their full commitment on Lena Epstein, other than giving her a position on this new committee. So this is more about Congress and losing congressional seats and not making it look so bad for the president going into the 2020 election. Because remember, we could have two blue waves. If it happens in 2018, it could triple over to 2020, because then that would allow the Democrats then to take over the Senate for sure.
Do you really think that three congressional seats could be up if we're looking at this 10 plus or 10 point
yes,
surge?
If it got that bad, yes.
What about Upton?
Upton is as moderate as it needs to be, and he's conservative as he needs to be. Remember when he first ran, we just thought the fact that he was more conservative than Attila the Hun. And then he turned out the fact of being moderate. He's somebody that the people really like, and he's not going to be caught by Donald Trump hurting him.
But the analysis here that the Republican Governors Association is doing whatever they can to try and keep shooting, prop him up to help him.
Or keep him close. If he can't win, you got to keep it close.
They're doing whatever. If that's shifting money around, if that's getting staff, whatever, they can't let go of shooting right
True.
Now.
True. Well, the other thing that's important here, the fact is that why do they come in here, the fact? Because they're hurting in other states, too. What's unique about Michigan? The Governors Association basically is a hard dollar run operation. They were hoping that the corporate soft dollars would fill the void of their hard dollar. And if our poll shows the fact that the corporate tight people, they want to get involved, then they're going to be running dry on soft dollars to make up for the lack of soft hard dollars that they would really like to have to shift some other states. Because this we've got to remember, this happened in 1994 with Democrats, with Bob Carr for the U.S. Senate race. He was leading until October 1st, and then all of a sudden, remember, he went dark. Okay, that money went to the Richards race in Texas and to save Kennedy in Massachusetts. So the question is, the fact is, what do they do here in Michigan? Obviously, we'd love him to have him as a Republican governor. But the point being, if they can't get him as governor, they don't want him to have a big loss because that's going to hurt potentially three congressional seats.
And possibly more.
Possibly more, yes.
Well, thanks a lot for the analysis. And as far as results, John, what can we expect?
We're going to be sharing them with our subscribers probably Monday afternoon at some point. At least the first round, the gubernatorial, probably U.S. Senate.
So keep on the lookout for that.
Joining me on the other end of the line is the candidate in the 107th House District for the Democrats. Her name is Joanne Galloway. Thanks for joining us on the podcast today.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be able to reach out and get the word out. I understand I come from the rural 107th district, but honest to gosh, this race up here and our current representative should really cause people to pause all across this entire country.
Okay, well, tell us why. Tell us why folks should be paying attention to the 107th. There's a lot of districts folks are paying attention to up here. Why should they put the 107th on the list?
Well, our current representative is Lee Chatfield, and he's 29 years old, and he seems to be strongly backed by the DeVos funding. And I just have to kind of wonder if the opposition hasn't reached out over the years into districts that they know aren't being well tended by the Democratic Party and found people that they knew would be willing to be putty in their hands and fronted them to run for office. And now they've got all of their players sitting in the legislatures, maybe not just in Michigan, maybe all across the country. Haven't studied that far, but I know that here in Michigan, my representative doesn't represent the people of this district very well. If we look at his voting record, I think he tends to side always for large corporations, always for big money, and I don't see him taking care of the issues that really matter to the people in our district.
Well, we'll touch on Lee Chatfield here a little bit later, but let's talk about you for a minute. Tell our listeners a little bit about your background. You're the owner of a ranch up in the Upper Peninsula.
Yes. In 1999, my husband Gary and I took over my family farm, and I had moved here with my parents to Pickford when I was 7, and I had left in 1981 and gone to Grand Valley. But then in 99, my dad had cancer and could no longer run what was an operating farm. And for a summer, neighbors stepped in and kept things going. And my husband was ready for a career change. He worked in tool and die, worked long hours, was never home. And I threw out to him, well, what would you think about taking over the farm? And he said, maybe. So we explored it, and that's what we did. He had never farmed a day in his life, and it's been quite a challenge and an adventure, and we've made that happen.
You've got animals there, right? This isn't a vegetable farm, right?
Well, it's both, actually.
Okay.
So we have we own about 500 acres here, and we have what they call a cow-calf operation. So it's beef cows that calve each year, and then we market the calves. And then we also raise a lot of hay. This area here is known for cool-season grass hay that supplies some farms in lower Michigan in larger round bales and supplies a lot of horse farms and feed stores farther south in North and South Carolina, Georgia, and Florida.
Now, Gary McDowell, who was from that area, he grew hay as well, didn't he?
He absolutely did. His family is one of the pillars of the hay industry, actually, in this region. And he, Gary McDowell and his family are our farm neighbors here.
Ah, no kidding. So did he talk you into running for the 107th, or did that, or is that a separate decision altogether?
Well, it was a separate decision altogether, but when I first spoke with Gary about it and asked if I'd have his support, he didn't hesitate one second to say, I'll proudly be behind you 100%.
So tell us how you got into this.
Yes, that's been kind of interesting. I mean, it kind of all started back 8 or 10 years ago. I started to say that my husband had his very own religion, and that was watching all the political news shows on Sunday morning. It was as the talking back to the TV got more and more common in my den that I said, hey, I think I need to get you out of the den and talking to real people about these conversations. So for a few years, I would take him to party events and just kind of be there, you know, as support. And then over the years, took more and more interest. And really after the election in November of 16, I saw a lot of my own friends and family being just very struck by what was happening across our country, not to mention in our state as well. And I tend to be a community organizer, a community supporter, and so I was the one that brought those people together so they could talk to each other, support each other, and then kind of led them into, you need to take action, you need to do something. And as we rolled into late 17 and early 2018, I was the one that had, my goal coming into 2018 was to have a Democrat in every slot on every ballot in the Eastern Upper Peninsula.
Hmm.
So I spent my winter talking that up. I was not as successful as I would have liked to have been, but ultimately I ended up chairing a committee of people that were very concerned that we field a quality candidate to run in the 107th House seat, and in the end it ended up being me. I seriously had never planned to run for office. Like,
so you were looking for someone to run, but then it just ended up being you.
Yep. I mean, as you learn more about it, so you can tell other people about it, you become more informed about what's involved in running and what's involved in holding office and representing. And for the longest time, I said no. And then one friend one day said, you know, you've got a lot of street cred. And I said, okay, street cred, what's that? Well, street credentials, like, you know, you've been a 4-H leader, your kids have been 4-H, you've homeschooled, you've had kids in public school, you've done all these things. People know you, they trust you. I'm like, well, I have been growing people's food for 19 years. They definitely trust me.
Tell our listeners about the reaction you've received since you started campaigning.
Amazingly positive. I mean, it started by me just in small groups of people that I trusted saying that I was thinking about running for office. Not one person tried to talk me out of it. And I will have to say that people are fired up. They want change in this district. And I have a team of over 100 very close, very strong team members, most of whom were in place, ready to do something before they even knew who was going to be running.
Now, presumed, I guess, down here that the Upper Peninsula in northern Michigan is Trump country. Tell me what you're experiencing as far as the people up there and their opinion on Donald Trump.
I try not to induce conversations about President Trump. I really make the conversations about myself. I'm a farmer. I'm a part of this community. I'm the one who started our region's very successful Lachineau Farmers and Artisans Market. I'm the one who said, hey, we need to have this, you know, startup business class for local small business owners wanting to get going. And that's what I tend to focus my conversations on.
Now, why is that?
Because that's what resonates with the people here. They're looking to relate to somebody. They're looking to have somebody that would represent them that they know that they can trust.
So you don't want to get engaged in a discussion on Donald Trump, because then that steers the conversation away from the local aspect, what you would like to do?
Right. Like, I'm not running against Donald Trump.
But Donald Trump would seem, just by looking at the polls, to be pretty popular up north.
Well, what did polls show us in 2016?
All right, I get your point. Let's focus on your opponent now, Lee Chatfield, one of the leaders here of the House Republicans, and presuming the Republicans keep majority, would be the Speaker of the House. He'd have a lot of sway in Lansing, and I guess your section of Michigan would have a lot of power, it could be presumed. How do you convince people that they don't want to support him?
I don't have to.
Really? What are they telling you?
People are fed up with it. People are fed up with not being properly represented.
Well, what do they say that he's not doing?
They don't feel like when he votes that they are being represented. I mean, just look at his quarterly reports. Do you see any donations coming from our district?
I did see that he's raised a lot of money.
He has raised a lot of money. I know when I looked at I think it was the first quarter of this year, was my review of that was one of the things that propelled me forward in searching for someone to run in opposition to him. And that was that there was not a single donor from our district listed.
Now, when he ran the first time in 2014, he upset a sitting incumbent, Frank Foster, who was at the time arguably entrenched in the Lansing establishment and was involved with the Lansing lobbying corps and was supposed to bring a new, fresh, conservative face to state government from the 107th. Are you saying he's not done that?
I think what we see over and over again is people being bought by promises of great financial gain. And that's what's going to really make me different. You can take a look at how I've lived my life, and I live a very simple life. And I'm motivated by things that are outside of financial gain. I do a lot of things in my community that might compromise my time and financial gain of what I could be doing with my farm, but it's important to the community as a whole. And so I do a lot of those types of things. But you bring up a really good point, and that is the fact that if the GOP is able to maintain control in the Michigan legislature, that Mr. Chatfield is in line to be Speaker of the House. And that is another thing that makes my race so very important.
So what are you seeing out on the campaign trail with him? He's been known to be a pretty ferocious campaigner out there.
You know, you don't see too much of him. I was at an event on Sunday, as a matter of fact, where he was busy serving baked beans. He came, he served beans, he left. I took an opportunity to have a lot of great conversations with people from the district while I was there and talk with them about what their concerns are.
You were there much longer than I take it.
Yes, I arrived near the beginning of the event, and actually, I mean, by the time I was done talking to as many people as I could, it was time for the event to be done.
How positive are you that you're going to win this?
I think there's a lot of things that are happening that don't meet the eye. I think this year's elections are going to be very hard to predict. In some ways, it's a constant battle every day of how much I want to talk about that and how much I just want to be quiet about it and let it be a surprise.
So basically, you're trying to fly under the radar, but in a way, you're kind of not.
Right, because the reason that I'd be better off not to fly under the radar is the financial support that I could get from people from across the state or across this country to help me with this grassroots campaign would allow me to get on radio, TV, and newspaper to make sure that everybody in every corner of my district knows they have a choice when they go to the polls in November, and they know who I am.
But if you make too much noise, Lee Chatfield's got a sufficient war chest, and he's got a significant political action committee. He could spend a lot of money if he sees the polls are going the wrong way for him.
All I can say is every dollar he spends provides jobs for people.
That's a positive way of looking at it. Anything else you want to tell our listeners today?
Well, I'm so happy to have the opportunity to create some additional awareness of my campaign and get the message outside of the district that you've got this farm woman from Pickford, north of the Mackinac Bridge, that's running. Things that are important to me are the environment. I really think we need to look at shutting down Line 5. When we look at how much we emphasize the Pure Michigan campaign, and so many of those Pure Michigan businesses are here in northern Michigan and rely on the beauty of our environment, anything to do with the environment, I think, is just very important to maintain. I've been a protector of the environment for 19 years here on the farm. We don't use any pesticides or any herbicides here. I look at public education, and I look at how many of our young people are leaving our state, and I think a two-prong approach with that, I mean, we need to put the dollars back into public education and properly support our teachers we've been demonizing over the years. We need to support our workers here in Michigan. I mean, repealing the prevailing wage law was not what we needed to do here. That's not going to save our state money. the bids are all going to come in about the same, and it's going to give the large corporations a higher profit, while we see reductions in the quality of work and the amount of pay that our workers are receiving. It's just really important that we look at protecting the people of Michigan. I understand that corporate profits are important. Those corporations provide jobs, but I'd like to see a little bit healthier balance.
Joanne Galloway, she is the Democratic nominee in the 107th House District. And just for our listeners' benefit to talk about how she did in the primary, she did have a primary opponent who she beat 84% to 16%. So a pretty overwhelming victory for her in the primary as she moves on to the general. Thank you for your time today. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Bob.
All right, hit the stop. Hit the stop.
Just white noise down the highway. We can blame it on the things that we never could change. Blame it on the...
Jack O'Malley, he is the Republican nominee in the 101st House District here in the state of Michigan. Thanks for joining us on the podcast today.
Thank you, Kyle.
So give our listeners a little background in yourself. You are a former morning radio host up in the Traverse City area, correct?
Correct. I've been the morning show host on WTCM FM 103.5 for 34 years, and very proud of that, and worked hard, did the show every morning. I also did a segment on the local CBS affiliate called Jack's Journal, and I've done that for 20 plus years, and of course I've had to give that all up once I started running for office.
God, that must have been really hard. I mean, to have a radio program for that long and then to step away from office. What drove you to do that?
Well, I'll tell you, my last show, I will say, was very emotional. I was also just totally blown away. That day I was physically drained at the end of the day. I'll be honest, the outpouring of love, the comments, you know, you do something like that and you put your heart and your soul into it and you want to reach out to the people of the region. And when you know that you were successful, that's a really good thing. And the reason people ask, why are you running? I never served in the military. Oh, I can give you details as to my family members that have been into it, but I never did, and I've always had great respect, and I know the service that those men and women have done, and I've always felt a little regretful that I never did. And I look at this run, and hopefully, you know, 6 years in the State House, as my opportunity of service to my country and to my region and to the people. And I also look at it as a way to continue what I started on radio, because when you're in radio, broadcasting, but I'll say radio, you have to know these people. You have to reach out to them and learn who they are. I've been on the air after major blizzards or heavy rains or the death of a police officer. I've been through 34 years of life with these people. I know them. And this might sound hokey to somebody listening, but I love them, and I want to continue that service. I want to go down to Lansing and be the representative for the 101st and do the very best I can to represent these good people.
Now, WTCM, where is that based?
Signed on the air January 8th, 1941 in Traverse City, Michigan, and it has been in this building that I'm sitting chatting with you right now since 1946. I've been on the air 77 years. I personally live in Lake Ann, which is about 12 or 13 miles outside of Traverse.
Now, the reach then, obviously then the folks in Leelanau County, Benzie County, Manistee could get it. Does it go as far as Mason? That's the other county. Oh, does it really?
You better believe it. Oh, my gosh, yes. Yes, yes, it does. WTCM is 100,000-watt FM. And we also have kind of a repeater station to the north. So I broadcast to 20-plus counties every morning. The service area is basically from the Straits area, I say down I-75, over towards Big Rapids and across to Lake Michigan. Now, obviously, they can hear us in the eastern UP. They can hear us on the other side of I-75, but that was the service area.
And what's the format? Is it a talk format, or is there music in
no.
the afternoon?
The station is country music, which I think is a perfect format for my personality and who I am. But my show, it was not a talk show. I refer to it, I'll use kind of an old radio school term, it was full service. I had news, weather, sports, interviews, music, jokes, stories of the day. We did it all. And I think we did a darn good job.
Okay, so you weren't like a political personality. You weren't necessarily sharing no. political opinions like, let's say, a Steve Gruber or something like that.
No, what I did was, well, first of all, I laugh because my opponent's party refers to me as a right-wing radio host. And I say, well, if you're talking about common sense, family values, the other side, because I think the national media has fallen down on its job. And so I always tried to present, hey, think about this. If that makes me right wing, I worry about who they are. But, yeah, what I do is I believe that politicians are politicians. But the reason our country is in the shape that it's in is because our national media has done a very poor job of showing both sides of the issue. And so on my show, I'd say, hey, I'm not telling you how to think. I'm just saying, here's what they're saying in the news. Here's another option to think about. And I've had a lot of people come to me and say, you know, I didn't think you were a crazy conservative. You gave both sides. And I've even had Democrat folks, liberal folks who listen and say, you know what, I didn't agree with some of the stuff you were saying, but you're always entertaining and fun. So I always tried to be respectful when I talk. And that's one of the things I think that's important in where I'm at today is – I may be a Republican, but I want to listen to the other side because that's what I've done for all these years. I listen to people, and then I try to communicate. So I respect everybody. We might not agree on this topic, but let's talk things through. Let's find that area where we do agree, and let's go from there. Or maybe when we talk, guess what? I might not change my mind, but you might give me something to think about so that when I am as your state legislator making a decision, I'll say, you know, wait a minute here. I agree with you guys, but, you know, this point was brought up. I know I'm willing to listen and do that because I think that's the fair, honest way to do. I'll always be true to who I am, but I will listen.
Now, have you been active in Republican politics up until this point?
No, I haven't because of my job. I felt that it's important that, you know, I was, I don't want to say neutral, but I wasn't leaning one way because I want to be respectful to everybody. Okay. Now, anybody who listened to me knew how I think and where I stood. Anybody who's listened to me for 34 years knows who I am. And I think that's a fair, honest person. But no, I was not overly involved. I was involved in different community things and events, but not party politics.
Now, are you from Northwest Michigan originally?
Nope, born and raised in Detroit. Grew up listening to WJR and Ernie Harwell and all of those guys, and that's where my love of radio began. Mm-hmm. And I moved up to Traverse City in 1984 when I got this job, and I've been here ever since, and it is now my home.
So being in radio and being in media, that can be a very transient job, folks moving up the ladder. You know, you go to one station and then you want to maybe go to a bigger market, but you've decided to stay in this market. Why is that?
Because there's lots of reasons why people get into radio, and one of the reason I got into it was I loved the communication of it. I loved the personal part of it. When I'm talking on the radio, I'm talking to you. There's 100,000 people listening, but I'm talking to you. And there is a connection that's made there. And I'm also always been a guy who had service in my heart. I didn't just do this because I liked the music. I did it because of what radio could provide. And so I moved up here, and the Biederman family, who own WTCM, have made this a community radio station. And it... And so that fit my personality. And so why move? It's a great place to raise a family. It's a great company to work for. I'm working in an industry that is fantastic. And you know what? I'm making a difference. Why go to Detroit, Chicago, or Indianapolis? I got everything I need right here.
Well, and you can't argue with the scenery up there either. Traverse City, Leland Albenzie, probably one of the most beautiful parts of the whole state.
And you know what, Kyle? I hope people don't shudder when I say this. I like winters too. I'm okay with winners.
Yeah. Well, you got to have to be to live up there. Let me talk to you a little bit about the campaign here. There's been a lot made about a blue wave coming. We're seeing a lot of numbers come in from the primary as far as turnout and also polling numbers that would seem to indicate the Democrats are going to have a very good year this year. What are you hearing when you're talking with folks out there?
I guess when I'm talking to that soft Democrat, if there's a hard Democrat out there, I'm probably not going to change his or her mind, and I respect that. I might not agree with them, but I respect that. But those soft Democrats, you know what? The national level is the national level. This is a state level. And that's one thing I wish I could get through to people is what's happening on the national level, a state legislator has zero, if very little, effect on. Let's talk about what's going on in the state. So I think if my message is, hey, you know what? I'm a Republican. I'm a conservative guy, but I am willing to listen because that's what I've done for all these years. That's who I am. Give me the opportunity to go and represent. So blue wave, red wave, you know what? Right now, my focus is on winning this seat, and I am going to work hard to win the 101st. So that's what I'm really focused on. I will say, though, as a former radio commentator, if you will, you know what? I don't know. Polling, God bless them. A couple weeks before the national election in 2016, they had Hillary winning it in a landslide, and they were wrong. So there's a lot of people, specifically on the conservative side of things, they don't trust the media. They don't trust the pollers, so they don't answer or they stay quiet. So maybe the polls are 100% right of the people they polled. The ultimate poll will be on November 6th. We'll see what happens.
Jack O'Malley, from a Lake Ann Republican. He's a former host of WTCM Morning Radio, and he's running the 101st House District as the Republican nominee. Thanks for joining us on the podcast today.
Kyle, I love Mears News. Keep it up.
Hey, I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's edition of Mears Monday. Thanks to Gideon DeSandro, Joanne Galloway, Jack O'Malley, Ed Zarpolis, and the boss, John Rurink, AT&T, for sponsoring this and all our other podcasts.
Before we leave, since we interviewed the candidate up in the 107th, would this surge help her?
Yes.
Could she win?
Well, if the movement continues, because what's happening in the polls is that we know that Debbie Stabenow, Gary Peters, and including Barack Obama has not won the UP. Mm-hmm. With the numbers that we're seeing in these polls, If you're talking about Lazarus rising, it'll be in the UP.
Future possible next speaker might not even be in the chamber.
That's correct.
Well, with that, we're going to end the podcast. Thanks, Ed, and we'll see you next week. Interesting. Okay, we're going to end the podcast. Thanks, Ed, and we'll see you next week.